So this is a show you mentioned to me, which apparently in my little research, it was incredibly popular and super successful, and I never heard of it before. But I mean, to be fair, it's not of my era, but it is the show Sea Hunt. So what can you tell me about Sea Hunt?
Sea Hunt. I remember Sea Hunt being on television. Now, I think it was made in 1957. I did not see it that early on because I would have only been 6 years old. I remember seeing it when I was about 8 or 9, I suppose. Lloyd Bridges is the star, who is the father of all those Beau Bridges and Jeff Bridges and all those Bridges actors. All I remember about it are the underwater scenes. They seem to, like as a kid watching it, they seem to do a lot of, obviously there were storylines that went with this show, but I just remember a lot of aquatic stuff, oxygen tanks, and then they were always running into sea life that of course was going to give them some strife. So that's really all I remember about it. It was in black and white. But it was quite exciting. What I don't remember any of the details of any of the shows. I just remember it was something that we all would get together because, oh, Sea Hunt's on. Got to watch Sea Hunt tonight.
Yeah, I was quite surprised. I mean, it's basically the exact same situation as Leslie Nielsen, again, just being from a later generation. When I learned that Leslie Nielsen was a serious actor, I was like, really? Because I only knew him as a comedian. Lloyd Bridges is exactly the same situation. Like, I know him from like the Hot Shots movies where he was the general, and he's always like, ah, what a beautiful day. Wish my nostrils hadn't been blown out in Nam. Or like someone will hand him a paper and he's like, you help me with this? My eyes are ceramic. You know, just like all these nonsense, crazy lines. Or this one line we loved when I was a teenager, we thought it was so funny, was this guy is like, all right, we're going to send up the bogeys and do the blah, 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 and giving him all the military jargon. And he just goes, I don't have a clue what you're talking about, Phil. Not a fucking clue. And he delivered it so well. So that's where I know Lloyd Bridges from. But then to learn that, of course, he had a career before then. Of course, he isn't just a hilarious old man. But I just never thought about it. It never occurred to me.
And I don't know a lot about Lloyd Bridges as a younger man, but I don't think TV was necessarily where he got his start. I think he may have been an actor long before that in movies.
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't look up his actual career that much, but I did look up Sea Hunt. So let me just give you some of the quick facts that I learned about Sea Hunt. So Sea Hunt is an American action adventure television series. It aired from 1958 to 1961, so very close. It was popular for decades afterwards. It aired for 4 seasons with 155 episodes. Lloyd Bridges was cast as lead character Mike Nelson. Sea Hunt was intended, oh yeah, this is interesting. Sea Hunt was intended as a comeback vehicle for Bridges due to his being briefly blacklisted from acting. He was restricted from mainstream Hollywood roles after admitting to the House Un-American Activities Committee that he'd been a member of the Actors Laboratory Theater, a group that was tied into the Communist Party. So yeah, all that crazy McCarthyism stuff that really made no
Okay.
sense.
All that McCarthy business, he was blacklisted. Well, that's interesting. So he was an actor years before Sea Hunt.
And I just think stuff like that, like a lot of my knowledge of that era is literally from like Ayn Rand biographies, but it's an interesting facet to look at it from, because Ayn Rand was super pro-capitalism and super duper anti-communism. You know, she escaped Russia by the skin of her teeth. She hated that stuff, and yet she was completely against McCarthyism. She was like, this is the dumbest shit, that I've ever seen in my life. Like, even a person who really did believe that there was a socialism problem in Hollywood was like, this is not how you deal with it. This doesn't make any sense at all. So that's pretty damning. But yeah, Lloyd Bridges got caught up in that, unfortunately. So Bridges served in the United States Coast Guard during the Second World War and afterwards joined the Coast Guard Reserve. So he was already familiar with ocean-going ships. And then over the course of the show's run, Bridges got more involved in the underwater stunt work, graduating from close-ups in the earliest episodes to doing all but the most dangerous stunts by the end of the series' run. So nice, nice work. He became an underwater expert. But I did see that, like, apparently this show, like, it was the kind of thing like late-night hosts would do monologue jokes about and stuff, that just every week there's a an underwater problem, because that really was the whole show. However, this also blew my mind, just the way television has changed. During the first 9 months of its debut, it was number one in the ratings, and producer Ivan Tors later estimated that 40 million people viewed the series weekly. So again, I have these weird frames of reference where, in this case, my frame of reference is pro wrestling. So in the late 90s, when wrestling had its big boom with The Rock and Stone Cold, and like it was huge again, it was probably the biggest wrestling ever had been, and it had about 7 million viewers. And nowadays, wrestling has about 1.5 million viewers, and they're just happy to have them. 40 million viewers. What the heck? That is so many people. That is crazy, but that's just...
Of course, you have to put it back at the time. Okay, so this was 1958. What would you have had for TV? You would have had CBS, NBC, ABC. Those would have been your big TV stations. You would have had maybe a bunch of private ones around, but they wouldn't have been national. But in the States, there would have been your three big ones. So really, you had three channels to watch from. Well, now what, you've got everything. My God, you can, I don't know how many channels there are that people can watch now, but it's huge. So you've got all these other options. Well, at 9 o'clock, let's say on a Wednesday night, you would have had those three major stations. And if Sea Hunt is your most exciting show that's on there, yeah, I guess everybody's going to watch that. They're going to be watching some talk show or some little comedy show or whatever. They're going for the big action show. There's your 40 million people.
And it seems that it was based on a movie that was in turn based on a book about a Navy SEAL diver guy. So yeah, it seems like it was a pretty legit show, like pretty well researched and extremely popular. So I got the first two episodes, and yeah, let's go back to Sea Hunt. Let's return to those days when 40 million people watched one TV show.
Okay.
It's kind of comforting in a way, just knowing that everybody's, like when you go to work on Monday, you're standing around the water cooler. Hey, you guys see Sea Hunt? Yeah, everybody did. Everybody saw Sea Hunt. It's kind of nice. I mean, we sort of had that. Like in my generation, everybody watched Cheers. Everybody watched Seinfeld, but it still wasn't the same. And yeah, nowadays, forget it.
Okay, check her out.
Hello there. I'm Lloyd Bridges. You know, 3/5 of the world is covered by the sea. And how little most of us know about that underwater world. Go below with us again next week, huh? For another thrilling adventure in Sea Hunt.
So I guess I was going to say, how does Sea Hunt live up to your memories? But I guess, like you said, you barely had memories of it. Just that it was a thing.
Well, as I say, I don't have a lot of memory of it as a kid, but well, it holds up. It more than holds up. I think it's excellent. It's got all sorts of drama, good acting, educational, teaching you all kinds of things about life under the sea and oxygen tanks and timing and excellent. I can see why it was such a popular show.
Yeah, I'm glad we watched a second episode because the first one I thought was pretty good, but like it helps to have a sense of the shape of what the overall show is going to be. Because after the first one, I did kind of have the feeling of like, all right, that was pretty cool, but next week, how could it be any different? You know, a sea rescue and then a sea rescue and then a sea rescue, right? But I actually liked episode two quite a bit more than episode one, and I had nothing against episode one. So I'm like, oh, all right, There is meat on these bones. Yeah, like there is a lot going on in the ocean. There's a lot of stuff you can do.
Well, and the second one was entirely different than the first one because it was not rescue in the Pacific Ocean. It was in a mine shaft, 1,500 miles inland, I think they said.
Yeah, and I mean, apparently they did 155 episodes. I did read, that's one of these things I really don't understand fully, but they said that it only got canceled not because of unpopularity. It was just because it wasn't a network show. It was a syndicated show. And the rates for selling syndicated shows just went down. You know, that's a whole business side of TV that I really don't understand. But yeah, the only thing that threw me off, it is just the curse of, you know, growing up with the other Lloyd Bridges. Like that line from Hot Shots where he's like, I don't know what you're talking about, Phil. I don't have a fucking clue. Like me and my friend said that to each other all the time, you know, like anytime you just don't want to, you know, you're tired of talking to somebody or you just don't want to acknowledge their point. You just say, I don't even know what you're talking about. I don't have a fucking clue. And it's just so funny that his voice is exactly the same. So every time he did one of these voiceovers, I kept waiting for the punchline and it just doesn't come. This is a very serious show. I had a hard time getting over that, but that's my own fault. That's nothing against C-Hunt.
But it is. It's a very serious subject matter. And especially that second show gave you the sense of how fearful it would be to be in a situation like that. And if you were like the miner who panicked, I mean, that man couldn't swim. And here he's got to go in water and pass back and forth an air supply. And of course he's going to panic. So that second show really dealt with human nature. And it was really quite scary when you think of a mine collapses and you happen to survive just because you're in an air pocket, but eventually that air pocket's going to die out. And what are the chances that anybody's going to rescue you? Because they had no idea when they sent Mike Nelson down into the shaft, they had no idea that any of them were still alive. They just presumed that they were all dead because they'd already recovered a fair number of bodies. So they deal with very serious subject matter. They didn't say, oh, no, we rescued everybody and everybody was fine. No, right from the get-go, they told you they were probably all dead. Even in the first show, the pilot, when it went down, they talked about him. It was just presumed he had died in that crash. They were quite surprised to find out that he had survived. So the show doesn't soft soap things or try to make things lighthearted. Oh, yes, something like that can happen and there'll be survivors. They just presume right from the beginning that no, there isn't.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like there is that pretty distinct line between shows that want to soften the edges and don't. Because I always think of when I was a kid, like Rescue 911 with William Shatner, they'd be covering like a car flipped over and caught on fire and it exploded, but the guy survived. And it was weird because you're like, no, he didn't. He definitely didn't. But then on the other side, there was Robert Stack in Unsolved Mysteries. That show scared the crap out of me when I was a kid because they were just like, and he was never seen again. Sorry, no happy ending. Everything is crazy. So C-Hunt is definitely more of that side of things of like, let's really try to be serious about this.
This show also doesn't have a big denouement at the end that is very satisfying to the audience. Like in this one, he brings the second guy up, second life save, end of show. Like there was no real what happened to these people at the end, you know, did they rebuild the shaft? Da, 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 da. And the same thing with the first show. They brought up the pilot. He's on his way to the hospital, but that's it. Show ends. It's just very like we dealt with the issue. We dealt with the show. We saved who we needed to save. We're not going to get into all this smoochy, lovey-dovey, sweet ending, softening up the storyline. They just don't. They just say story starts, story ends. See you next week.
Yeah, I like too. I think why I liked the second episode especially is that quandary of he finds these two people in an air pocket from a collapsed mine, and he only has enough air for one of them. And, you know, you like to think in that situation, you'd be the noble person that would be like, it's okay, take the other guy. But probably not. You're probably panicking and freaking out. So, like, the way that one of the two miners acted, like, is very realistic. It's like, yeah, you would be. Like, why should he get to be saved and not me? Oh, he's got a wife and kids. I don't care. Save me.
In a lot of shows when we knew that the main mine manager had lost his son, he's one of the first ones to be brought up deceased. A lot of shows trying to soften that element would have had that son being one of the survivors. And then you would have had that whole other element put in. But they didn't do that here. These were just two guys. We don't know who they were. We don't know what their family was like, except one guy said he had a couple of kids. That's all we know about them. They're just two people who could be two people anywhere. They didn't draw us into that emotional connection that one of them would be the son of the manager, you know, which a lot of storylines would have gone down that road, but these didn't. I thought it was It was very realistic. I also liked that it was in black and white. Sometimes if you're trying to show the seriousness of a situation or human nature and how it can be so conflicting, black and white is so much, it's grainier or more realistic or hard hitting. If you put color in, color adds, color softens the story. So to do it in black and white really kind of, I think, added to the storyline of the message that these guys were trying to get across, that, you know, human nature is kind of sucks, especially in number two.
Yeah, black and white really ages better too. Like stuff like The Twilight Zone or Gunsmoke, like these shows that still feel classic. Like they don't age, they stay ageless. But yeah, I also wanted to mention what you said about not piling too much weird artificial drama in there, because yeah, that tires me out too. It takes you out of it when people do that. I've been a little surprised about that watching old shows, because I guess I did just have the bias of presuming that TV just got more and more sophisticated over the years. And I would say TV got more complicated, you know, like things are more complex now, more characters, longer narratives, yada, yada. But the fundamental way that a story is presented, like I'm always impressed with older shows that they're very grounded, like they do present things oftentimes. I mean, a lot of old shows are also corny and weird and dumb, but the good ones really do present things in this grounded way that is kind of, TV doesn't do that anymore. You know, it has a sense of realism to it that is hard to find nowadays.
Now, what is interesting about the show, it just came to be here now, in both those shows, they did start with a soft opening. The first show, he's in the marine land pool and he's trying to get this little shark. He's trying to, I don't know what he was trying to do with it, but he was grabbing its tail and that sort of stuff. In the second one, they brought the sex element in, because here he was with his partner in the pool and the little sea lion comes by and they played with it all afternoon, but she's not wearing a tank or anything. She's just got her little bathing suit on. So she looks very good. Meanwhile, he's all dressed up in the wetsuit, the tank on the back and the whole bit, but she's not. She's just got her mask on. She's got a little air thing in her mouth, but she's not wearing a tank or anything. Then they move from that little soft, sweet little opening into the serious issues of which then have to be resolved, that's why I'm surprised that it doesn't end with one of those little soft notes, but it doesn't. They just end very quickly. Resolve, story's over.
Yeah, those soft openings are actually so close to Airplane or Hot Shots, like to his joke stuff. You could so easily, because yeah, he's saying stuff like, oh yeah, the sea lion is, they're the clowns of the sea. We could watch them for hours and never get bored. But if he had said that while they showed the hot lady, there you go. There's a Hot Shots joke. Or in the first one, he's in the diving pool and they have to communicate with him through a blackboard that they just write on with chalk. And that was almost a joke, where they didn't say plane crashed or diver drowned. They just said important message. Like, that's almost a joke, that they didn't say what the message was. They just wrote that it was an important message. But yeah, then it seriouses up very quick after that.
Finishing up, I thought it was excellent. Both those shows, really, really well done. Lots of drama, lots of excitement, in the sense that you didn't know where it was going to go. Would he be? Well, you know that, because who he is, you know it's going to be successful, but you don't know how it's going to be successful.
Yeah, and let me just finish off with, this is just a comment that I saw somebody left on YouTube. Stick with me for a sec, because it's not clear why this is relevant right away. But a guy named Frank Bell left this comment. When I was a kid, we would go to the movies, which only cost 25 cents then. When the movies were over, yes, movies plural, you got more than one, then cartoons and Three Stooges. After the movies were over, we'd crawl under the seats looking for change that people had dropped. Many times I'd find a dime, nickel, quarter, and once I found a half dollar. Our money then was made of 90% silver, and we called our search Seat Hunt, named after this show. So I was reading this comment, like, what are you talking about, buddy? And then it's like, oh, okay.
There it is, the closing line.
I never thought about that, though, because even when I was a kid in the 80s, you know, I thought it was the greatest thing to go check, coin return slots in phones. And if somebody had a quarter in there, like, wow, I get to play a video game. But yeah, back in the 50s, wow, you find a half dollar under a seat.
Oh, my God.
Money Bags McGee with his money just falling out of his pants.
Yeah, that's probably like equivalent to $10 nowadays.
Yeah, not bad.